Book 12. The Cattle of the Sun. Now when our ship had left the ocean river rolling in her wake, and launched out into open sea with its long swells to reach the island of Aeaea, east where the dawn forever young has home, and dancing rings, and the sun his risings, heading in we beached our craft on the sands, the crews swung out on the low sloping shore, and there we fell asleep, awaiting dawn's first light. As soon as dawn with her rose-red fingers shone again, I dispatched some men to Circe's halls to bring the dead Elpenor's body. We cut logs in haste, and out on the island's sharpest jutting headland held his funeral rites in sorrow, streaming tears. Once we'd burned the dead man and the dead man's armour, heaping his grave mound, hauling a stone that coped it well, we planted his balanced oar aloft to crown his tomb. And so we saw to his rites each step in turn. Nor did our coming back from death escape Circe. She hurried toward us, decked in rich regalia, handmaids following close with trays of bread and meats galore and glinting ruddy wine. And the lustrous goddess, standing in our midst, hailed us warmly, "Oh, my darling reckless friends! You who ventured down to the house of death alive, doomed to die twice over, others die just once. Come, take some food and drink some wine, rest here the livelong day, and then tomorrow at daybreak you must sail, but I will set you a course and chart each sea mark, so neither on sea nor land will some new trap ensnare you in trouble, make you suffer more." Her foresight won our fighting spirits over. So all that day, till the sun went down, we sat, and feasted on sides of meat and heady wine. And then when the sun had set and night came on, the men lay down to sleep by the ship's stern cables. But Circe, taking me by the hand, drew me away from all my shipmates there, and sat me down, and lying beside me, probed me for details. I told her the whole story, start to finish. Then the queenly goddess laid my course. "Your descent to the dead is over, true, but listen closely to what I tell you now, and God himself will bring it back to mind. First, you will raise the island of the Sirens, those creatures who spellbind any man alive whoever comes their way. Whoever draws too close, off guard, and catches the Sirens' voices in the air, no sailing home for him, no wife rising to meet him, no happy children beaming up at their father's face. The high, thrilling song of the Sirens will transfix him. Lolling there in their meadow, round them heaps of corpses, rotting away, rags of skin shriveling on their bones. Race straight past that coast. Soften some beeswax and stop your shipmates' ears so none can hear, none of the crew. But if you are bent on hearing, have them tie you, hand and foot in the swift ship, erect at the mast block, lashed by ropes to the mast, so you can hear the Siren's song to your heart's content. But if you plead, commanding your men to set you free, then they must lash you faster, rope on rope. But once your crew has rowed you past the Sirens, a choice of routes is yours. I cannot advise you which to take or lead you through it all. You must decide for yourself, but I can tell you the ways of either course. On one side beetling cliffs shoot up, and against them pound the huge roaring breakers of blue-eyed Amphitrite, the clashing rocks they're called by all the blissful gods. Not even birds can escape them, no, not even the doves that veer and fly ambrosia home to Father Zeus. Even of those the sheer rocks always pick off one, and Father wings one more to keep the number up. No ship of men has ever approached and slipped past, always some disaster, big timbers and sailors' corpses whirled away by the waves and lethal blasts of fire. One ship alone, one deep-sea craft sailed clear, the Argo, sung by the world when heading home from Aeetes' shores, and she would have crashed against those giant rocks and sunk at once if Hera, for love of Jason,